You're listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Hi, I'm Karthik, but many of you know me better as Elahi on radio, and this is my new show, Healthwise. You all know me, I am an anime enthusiast, but do you know I studied medicine with a specialization in the field of paramedics? And that is what has inspired me to launch this podcast. Now, whether you are looking to boost your fitness, eat better, or improve your mental well-being, we have got you covered with expert tips, inspiring stories, and the latest in health tech research. This is a special episode brought to you by Merck. Today, we are going to discuss bladder cancer. It nearly affects 18,000 to 20,000 new patients annually. This cancer predominantly impacts men who are 3 to 4 times more likely to develop the disease than a woman. Moreover, the incidence of bladder cancer is higher in urban areas compared to rural regions. And yet, the awareness around it remains cloudy, often leading to delayed diagnosis and treatment. Consequently, many patients are diagnosed at advanced stages. And to discuss exactly this and the lack of awareness, we have with us today Dr. Vineet Talwar, who is the Director of Medical Oncology at Rajiv Gandhi Cancer Institute, New Delhi, and brings with him over 2 decades of expertise in oncology. He had completed his Medical Oncology DM from prestigious Adyar Cancer Institute. Dr. Talwar is also an esteemed member of global oncology societies like European Society of Medical Oncology, ESMO, American Society of Clinical Oncology, ASCO. Welcome to Healthwise, Dr. Talwar. To start off with, I want to ask you the first question, which is about how common is bladder cancer in India and why is it prevalent more in urban areas compared to the rural areas?
So that is a very important question. When you talk of bladder cancer, it is a relatively common malignancy. Around the sixth or the seventh most important cancer, if you see the hierarchy. And generally, it occurs around the fifth or sixth decades of life, if you go by the census. Coming to the question, why it is more in the urban population than in the rural population, I feel it is linked to the lifestyle which is there in the urban population vis-a-vis the rural population. Having said that, it is, intricately related to smoking. If you see the risk factors which are defined for bladder cancer, there is about a 2 to 3-fold increase risk in smokers as compared to the non-smokers. And if on a scale of 100, if you see the causation and association of bladder cancers, 50% of the bladder cancers are attributed to smoking. And this probably may have an increased propensity in the urban population, and that's why probably it might be linked to the increased incidence of bladder cancer in the urban population. Apart from that, there are some connotations that it might be related to some dietary components like fried meat and fats, which again probably there might be an increased propensity in the urban setting as compared to the rural setting. But bottom line is that 50% of bladder cancers are definitely related to cigarette smoking, and there is an increased chance of smoking in the urban sector as compared to the rural sector. Not saying that tobacco is not used in the rural sector, but it is more related to smoking than tobacco chewing per se. So that could be one reason. And the other reason is that in the urban areas, especially in the factories, where you have exposure to the aromatic hydrocarbons like benzene, For example, in the paint factories or in the plastic factories, you have increased usage of benzene, you have increased usage of naphthalamines. So they are known to have an increased risk in the causation of bladder cancer. So probably these are the reasons which might increase the incidence in the urban sector as compared to the rural sector.
This is one of the personal questions that I really want to ask. Can we actually say that false reporting may also be one of the major reasons why it's being reported more in urban areas compared to the rural areas? Because not many people actually go to these small villages and towns to actually do health checkups on a ground reality level. Can this be one of the major reasons as well?
Oh, definitely. Reason being, unfortunately, in India, as of now, you see there are a lot of health programs run by the government of India. Cancer is not a notifiable disease. So what you say, under-reporting or no reporting, the same thing I'm saying but in a different language, meaning thereby, if a person dies because of cancer, it is not necessary that somebody has to go mandatorily and report it to the health authorities. So sometimes it happens that a person who has cancer of the urinary bladder, along with that, the person has hypertension and coronary artery disease, a disease of the heart. The patient might have a heart attack while harboring the cancer. So in that case, the cause of death would be heart attack or cardiac cause than the cancer cause. So sometimes you are very right, it might not be attributable to the cardiac problem. It might be because of the bladder cancer problem, but it is not representative well. So this is a problem. If cancer becomes a notifiable disease in India, then probably to a large extent, it would be represented better.
So are there any clear symptoms of bladder cancer that people should be aware of? Because right now people have that small attention span and they tend to ignore things on the very beginning of that particular stage. And we actually get to know that we are diagnosed with a disease or a syndrome at a very advanced stage, and then things become a bit of a ruckus for us. So are there any clear symptoms of bladder cancer that people should actually be aware of?
Again, if a patient comes with bleeding in the urine, which we call as hematuria, on a scale of 100, it accounts for about 80 to 90%. And most of the times, this hematuria is painless. So if we have this bleeding in the urine, we try to, push it under the carpet. That is just a one-off phenomena. So in these patients, it might lead to the promulgation of disease further. Apart from this bleeding in the urine, there might be an increased frequency of urine, because in these bladder cancers, the size of the bladder, becomes less. So that leads to a decrease in the capacity of the bladder. And the person might keep on passing the urine on a higher frequency. Sometimes you might have clots in the bladder because of the tumor, and they might go and get obstructed in the outlet, which is the urethra. And that might lead to obstruction and pain in the lower part of the abdomen or in the flanks. So these are the situations where you can get the problems because of disease which is localized to the bladder. If you find the disease is already spread out to the other parts of the body, then pertaining to the sites, say for instance, if the disease has gone to the bones, you might have bony pains at night, which are unexplained. If it has gone to the liver, you might have jaundice. If it has gone to the lungs, you might have breathlessness, which might not be explained. So, any of these signs and symptoms, one should not get charged up unnecessarily. That is what I feel. But if all these symptoms don't get wane off with the routine treatment by going to the general physician nearby, and they persist for over, say, 3 to 4 weeks. For instance, if you keep on getting hematuria, that is bleeding in the urine, which is not getting corrected by the conventional treatments, there should be a strong index of suspicion that might I be harboring something else apart from the routine causes of bleeding or the increased frequency of micturition. So that should spark off something, and you should go to the specialist and get it sorted out as soon as possible. So this is a problem in our country where we keep on, you know, trying to shirk these issues, and ultimately sometimes we land in a big problem or soup.
Dr. Talwar, we as humans are quite hesitant about the fact that, you know, we can't really go to a doctor if we are not feeling well. We think that everything can be cured at home. But if we have a condition like bladder cancer, how can bladder cancer be diagnosed?
So, you know, again, it depends upon the symptoms. If you have symptoms which are showing a localized disease, then you should go to the doctor and get a scopy, which is known as a cystoscopy, in which a flexible tube is passed into the bladder. And there we see the, you know, grossly we see the tumor appearance. And if you see a lesion inside the bladder, you take a biopsy. And that invariably gives you a clue as to what you are dealing with. So once you know that you have a cancer of the urinary bladder on the biopsy report, then the next step is to see what is the spread of the disease. And that we know by the CT scans or the MRIs of the abdomen and the chest. So with the biopsy, you come to know about the name of the disease, and the spread of the disease you come to know from the CT scans and the MRIs. And when you, you know, merge both of these things and you get the data, you come to know about the stage of the disease. So ultimately, it is the stage of the disease which delineates further line of management.
Dr. Talwar, would you like to share any anonymous stories of one of your patients who successfully battled bladder cancer?
Oh yes, definitely. There was a gentleman around, he was, I think, about 54 years of age. And he was sitting coolly in his office and suddenly felt an urge to pass. So he went to the bathroom, and there, to his great surprise, he found that there was blood in the urine. And fortunately for him, he was very actively going after the causation of this bleeding. So he went to the physician. Physician referred him further. He got a cystoscopy done, where it was found that there was a lesion there in the urinary bladder. And again, you know, in bladder cancers, there can be superficial lesions and there can be deeper lesions. So the superficial lesions are the ones which can be tackled very easily, whereas the deeper lesions, they require extensive treatment. So for this gentleman, it was a superficial lesion in the bladder which had not gone to the muscle. It was excised fully, and after that he got sessions of treatment which were given through the catheter into the bladder. It was a kind of a bladder bath which used to be given to him initially on a weekly basis, then on a monthly basis. And in between, you know, just for reassurance, a cystoscopy was done to see whether things were going as per plan. And now I think it has been over 3 years, and he comes for his exam and he comes for his routine tests. He's continuing his job. He's been promoted last year. So I think things are panning out nice for him.
Dr. Talwar, people like you who have been the flag bearers in the country when it comes to medicine, you actually know the latest advancements that are happening related to bladder cancer treatment and research. And obviously for the people who are listening to us right now, they might want to know what are those latest advancements happening in the field of medicine when it comes to bladder cancer treatment and research, including the latest one, the maintenance treatment approach. Can you shed some light upon it?
Yeah. See, go back 20 years, what we had in an armamentarium was just chemotherapy. Slowly, we have come far from that, and next came targeted therapy. And nowadays, we are in the era of immunotherapy, in which you give immunotherapy drugs and control the disease, or sometimes cure the disease also. So the obvious question which comes is, what is chemotherapy, what is targeted therapy, what is immunotherapy, and how are they different? So I explain it with a very simple example. So I have a mango tree in front of me and I want the mangoes. So what do I do when I use chemotherapy? I fill my pockets with stones and start hitting the mango with the stones in the hope that few of the stones might hit the mango and it will drop down. But then when I'm doing that, I am hurting the leaves, I am hurting the branches, I am hurting the bark, meaning thereby, whenever I give chemotherapy, I am trying to kill the cancer cells. But at the same time, I am killing the normal cells also, which translate into side effects. Situation two, when I give targeted therapy, what do? I take a ladder, I climb the ladder, I go to the branch, take out a scissor, cut the mango and come down. So in this process, what I'm doing is, I'm not hurting the leaves, I'm not hurting the branches, and I'm able to get what I wanted, that is the mango in my hand. So targeted drugs are the ones which cause the same effects, the good effects as chemotherapy, but albeit at very minimal side effects, because they don't lead to damage of the surrounding tissues. The third kid in the block, which is the newest, is immunotherapy. Now, how does immunotherapy work? Immunotherapy works by charging up your whole own body system, the body immune apparatus in any human being is controlled by the T cells, T for anything you can say. So these T cells are the ones, when there is any infection or inflammation in the body, they go and get collected at the site and they try to either destroy it, the infection, or they try to push it out of the body circulation. For a normal individual, if we say that these T cells are say about 1000, when we inject the patients with immunotherapy drugs, they get compounded by, you know, millions or billions of T cells, and they go and they encompass the tumor in such a way that the body's immune mechanism fight against the disease and kills it. So what we have achieved till now is, either we can give chemotherapy, or we can give chemotherapy plus targeted therapy, or we can give chemotherapy plus immunotherapy. Earlier, what we used to do was that in advanced stages, we used to give chemotherapy, say, 5 or 6 cycles and achieve some kind of a control over the disease. But still, residual disease used to remain. But the clinical trials did not show that there was any additional benefit in giving more chemotherapy. But the flip side was, you used to get these side effects. So we used to call it a day at that point of time. Now, as you mentioned, when the patient has achieved a durable control over the disease, there might be a situation that there is no disease left out. There might be a situation that some disease might be left out. So in both these situations, to make sure that the disease does not come back, we give a maintenance treatment with immuno-oncology drugs. So you complement chemotherapy with immuno-oncology, and that is given over a period of 1 to 2 years to obviate any relapse, so as to say, and to get a durable control over the disease. So this is the new thing which has come, this new thought process, and that has helped people a lot, because a lot of people who used to relapse between relapse meaning the people in which the disease used to come back within a few months post treatment, fortunately that is not there at this point of time.
Dr. Talwar, impact of mental health and quality of life, they actually go parallel these days, because we live in an era where most of the young guns of the country are actually, you know, hovering on their paths while balancing their lives, because they are stuck in a corporate jungle, they are working for more than 12 to 14 hours a day, not getting adequate amount of sleep. So how does bladder cancer actually impact the mental health and quality of life, and what are the strategies that can help cope up with these challenges?
So anybody who suffers from bladder cancer, you know, it is like a bolt from the blue which blows the living daylights out of the person. One, because of limited knowledge. Second, because of the uncertainty which prevails. Because as I said, that in bladder cancer, it is stage 1 to stage 4. You come to the stage after you have done the scans and have found out where all the disease is located. So if it is a limited stage, that is stage 1 and 2, then these patients have a very high chance of cure. But if it is an unfortunate situation, say stage 4, there we look only for control. So when you are treating a patient of bladder cancer, it is a totally different ball game from treating patients in other specialties where it is a one-time affair, where the patient comes, get the surgery done and goes back home hale and hearty. Here you are not only treating the patient, but you are treating the whole family, because that patient might be the breadwinner, the sole breadwinner for the family. So when these psychological and emotional overtones are there, and mind you, these treatments are not cheap, they are expensive treatments. So when everything coupled with finances come, it is very, very overbearing psychologically and mentally for the patient. Physically, definitely it is. So what we do is we counsel these patients. We tell them that it is mostly in the mind and less physically, because the war is fought there. If you are strong physically and emotionally and psychologically, then half of the game is won. So you have typically two patients, one who is not mentally strong, or who is depressed, and you have another patient who's again having the same cancer, but he's ready to fight willingly the disease and is in a very good psychological state of mind. Definitely the person who's having a positive outlook towards life and fighting the disease, he or she fares the best as compared to an individual who is having a depressive outlook. So having said that, you don't have these kind of class-cut situations in our practice. So across the board, we try to counsel these patients. We also counsel them. We have our counselors, which are there and they keep on keeping a tab as to how the patient is performing physically and mentally and psychologically. And if need be, sometimes we give them medications to boost their morale and to boost their psychological state of mind, so as to say. Not once, but it is a continuum. So it is there at the inception of treatment, it continues through the treatment, and it goes on even after the completion of treatment, when you might have some residual side effects because of the treatment per se.
And with that, we conclude today's episode. A big thank you to Dr. Vineet Talwar for joining us and shedding light on the challenges surrounding bladder cancer. Thank you so much, Dr. Talwar.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can write to us at HT Smartcast or reach out to me on Elahi on Radio.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.